The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
So what we're going to do is begin by making some short presentations. I'm Bob Goldman, and in the international field, my colleagues with me today, David Snyder, who's also in partly in the international field, in domestic and business and so forth. David, Claudia Martin, who teaches in the human rights area, will also say a few words, but you know, we're here really mostly to answer questions for you. So,
Okay, sure. So, I'm David Snyder, and I do contracts and commercial law. That's what I teach. I do their U.S. and their international and their comparative pieces. And I'm here with my international hat on. And I'm here also to say international law is, well, let me just ask, how many of you are interested in what I'll call public international law? So human rights, law of war, stuff like that, raise your hand. And how many of you are here to do the stuff that matters? I mean, the private side of international law, or at least maybe. So I think you can guess that's the side I'm on. I divide the world of international
law. That's why he's wearing a suit.
I divide the world of international law into two camps, and it's actually generally very easy to tell where you are. If I say ICC to you, and that means the International Criminal Court, you're on the public side. And if I say ICC to you, and that means, without thinking, the International Chamber of Commerce, which gives you the Incoterms and the UCP, then you're on my side of the world. And so there's a quick and easy test, and if you really straddle both sides, then you won't know which one, and you'll have to ask. And I've never had that happen. So I'm here, as Professor Goldman said, we're all here mainly to field questions, but I want to give you a little bit of orientation to the private side of things. And in terms of the basic stuff that you need to know, I think knowing international law, you know, what international law is, how international law works, treaties, that sort of stuff, matters no matter what. And this may be my own bias, but I have to say, I think comparative law matters just as much, at least in my part of the world, where you're doing international transactions. Frequently, it is governed by international law. There are a surprising number of conventions that govern various international transactions. So there's true international law there. But what you have to realize is many, many international transactions will be governed by the domestic law of some country or another, and not by international law. But the parties will be allowed by the law to choose which jurisdiction's law will apply, and they will choose the domestic law of some country. And whether you're a transactional lawyer, or you do international commercial litigation, or international commercial arbitration, that stuff really matters, because as a strategic matter, if you're structuring the transaction, it could make a big difference to you whether you choose, say, the international treaty, or you choose, let's say, the law of New York, which is a frequent choice, or the law of England and Wales, which is another very frequent choice, and so on. And if you don't know what those choices are, or remember, most of the world is governed by a different system, by the civil law. If you don't know how the private side of civil law works, I'm not really talking about the constitutional stuff, although that comes in a little bit too. If you don't know how that works, you won't really understand how to make those strategic choices. And I think really more importantly, you won't be able to speak with understanding to the people on the other side of the table. And it helps so much to know where they're coming from. So that's the comparative law piece. And I wanted to explain that, because often that sort of gets lost in the international piece. And realize comparative law and international law, they're not the same thing, but they do come together and I think are really important. I want to make sure that there's some resources on the web that y'all know about and can take advantage of. So I've said a little bit about the divide between public international law like human rights and law of war on the one side and the private side. The private side actually has a number of different pieces, some of which are technically speaking public law also. Probably the most prominent part of the money side of international law is technically speaking public law because that's international trade law. And that's things like the WTO and customs and countervailing duties and anti-dumping duties and all that sort of stuff and free trade zones, free trade agreements, etc. Sometimes it gets called international economic law more generally. That's one piece. Interestingly enough, generally speaking, out in the world of law firms, government agencies, and so on, the people who do international trade law are not typically the same people who do international transactional law. So if you're the transactional lawyer, you're not, you know something about trade law and you can deal with the basics, but the trade law specialists do trade law and they will do a certain kind of advice and then a lot of litigation and regulatory work. So there's international trade, which is really sort of a separate practice area from international transactions. It's really sort of a separate practice area from international commercial litigation and international commercial arbitration. And then there's another side, which is pretty new and which is booming, so that's pretty relevant to you to know about, which is investment arbitration. And it often gets called BIT arbitration, B-I-T, because there are lots of what are called bilateral investment treaties. And the idea is, think about one-sided transaction, international transactions. It would be called international project finance. If I want to get together a big syndicate of people to go in and fund the building of, let's say, a dam or a highway system, so we're talking many, many billions of dollars of financing. We're going to come in, and the idea is we're going to get paid once the utility company is using the dam. Right, or once people are paying the tolls for the roads, or we'll get paid out in taxes eventually, or whatever the financing structure is, that's the international project finance. Okay, that's one piece, that's a transactional side. Realize I'm going to be really nervous if I spend these billions of dollars and this stuff gets built, and then the government says, we're nationalizing the dam, or the highway system is actually our national property, and we'll pay you just compensation. Well, they may say, too bad, we're not paying you anything. Or we're paying you just compensation, and you say that's a $50 billion dam, and we think it's a $2 billion dam. And you're litigating in their courts, and you're thinking, that's kind of scary. So you don't want to invest in the first place. So what has become a very hot area is to take that out of national courts and out of national domestic systems, move it into an international, typically arbitration realm. So that has been booming pursuant to these investment treaties, and we have a lot happening there. So that's another side. So part of my idea here is to tell you, okay, you weren't born knowing that all that stuff exists. Maybe I'll just tell y'all it's out there. Okay, so now let me show you some things that may be useful to you. So if you go to the main site of the law school, how many of you know about pathways? You all know about pathways. Okay, great. So if you go to pathways, which I just get to by searching it in the little search box here, and then go to international law, you'll see it is divided up, and you can look under international economic law, and then you can look under these different pieces. And if you just click on one, then you can find out what the basic courses are. And you have the foundational courses, key electives, experiential, and related courses. And you have that for each of them. I don't want to take time to go through it. It sounds like y'all know about it. Something else that you might find helpful if you're interested in the private side is, in addition to pathways, if you go to the business law program, so all I did was click on programs and then business law program is here, and click on view the curriculum, you can go to international, and if you find it easier to look this way, which sometimes I do, you can see just lists of international courses in the business area rather than having to go through the clicking back and forth with pathways. So pathways is more interactive. You might like that better. You might want to use this to supplement things. That I hope will all be helpful. I think I'm going to stop there and happy to take questions, I think, after we all have said our piece, right?
Okay. Sure. I'm older than him, and I'm going to stay seated. Don't mind. No lack of respect. I would certainly agree with what Christian said. The distinction that we used to see between public and private international law is really broken down considerably over the years, which doesn't mean that there's still not a discrete area. So what he's telling you about the comparative also implicates what we call private international law, which is otherwise known in the United States as conflict of law. And by the way, you all need to take conflict of laws to raise that. That's the one part that is excerpted out of the cases where you're dealing with the chosen substantive law. And to illustrate what David was saying, the legal aftermath of this really horrific plane crash, the tons of one. To illustrate the point. And I was just listening this morning to someone who taught for about 15 years conflict of laws here. Many years ago, I was thinking about the lawyers are going to have a field day. Because the conflict is subject to suit just about every major state in the world. And either Spanish or either British victim or American victim, choosing the forum and knowing what their conflict of law is. Are, which is going to tell you to deal with things like measure of damages and so forth and so on. What kind of system of private international law could have an enormous impact on what recovery would be? If you sue in the United States, you're probably going to do better than if you sue in France or you sue. So these are the practical things that I can tell you happened in practice and so forth. You really have to know. Because for lawyers, the implication of part of their negligence, with their this, with their that, they're going to have to pay some. I don't know if Ira or Bernie Core, excellent teachers in the area of conflicts I haven't taught in years, deal with any of the comparative law approaches and so forth. But it's something that you should have. If you're going to take, and I know that something like 65 or close to 70% of the applicants possible come here because of the breadth and depth of the international law curriculum. You've really got to start with a course in public international law. Some of you may be taking this in your first year. We have a variety of excellent people who do that. Diane Ortlicker and I tend to teach it for second and third students. Where I would say it's a bit more in depth than what you may be. In your first year. But before you take other courses, you should either take it simultaneously or preferably, you know, in your fall term, because it's the foundational course for everything you're going to study. Because knowing sources of international law, and particularly the peculiarities of U.S. legal system, we go about giving and denying legal effect in U.S. international law in a very different way than, for instance, many other Western democracies, and certainly civil law systems. So you need to get the foundational course and the law. My general advice to students has always been those who want to go out and practice many of you come and you do want to do public interest. We have probably placed, I would think, in the years that I've been here, students with more NGOs and international organizations than just about any other law school in the United States. And so they specialize in thinking about human rights courses, human rights, and so on. And that is one model. We're very lucky in this country that we have, and our principal law firms have pro bono work and so forth, where they devote their time and have associates sometimes full-time working on these issues. But you have to have a very general background. You have to be prepared. One, pass the bar, and you have to be able to know business associations, trade, commercial transactions, those trusted estates across the board. You just need to have, particularly, as I said, being becomes specialized, unless you're absolutely clear, because if you have a graduate background or you've done, you say, I don't care about that. I really want to go out and work with an NGO, and work with UNICEF, or with UNHCR, or with internally displaced persons. I have found, and it's been one of my things, see second year students begin invited, for instance, comments for the international law course of international law. This is very problematic. It's extremely problematic. And so you've really got to get that. You really have to get that out. And one of the good things here is because we have such, you know, you're not locked into something. You may have an interest in the environment and environmental. International environmental law and human rights law have really come together because the environmental community doesn't have any complaint procedures before the human rights treaty office and so forth. And the indigenous rights, rights to land, all sorts of things make very important gains in life. So you can move between them. You can take a course in international trade. And I would encourage that one to get as broad an exposure to international deal, I think, as you possibly can. Obviously, what we offer in the international human rights field. Superb, Claudia Martinez, what I think if you pull those law schools is the single best program in human rights law in the United States. Hands down. Hands down. That's why we clobber in the rankings any number of schools that supposedly are better known than us, but it is recognized as being a particular expert. Never be able to say everything you want to. So, you know, it's good to talk to the professors, it's good to support. We'll look at what the trade is, everything is a trade-off, and the like. With that, I'm going to ask Claudia to say certain things about the human rights program, and I'll be glad to answer your questions. I teach in the public international term. I also teach in the area of human rights. Terrorism and also law of war.
Thank you, Rob, and great to be here. I just wanted to say the same as Professor Schneider and Professor Goldman have said about international law is very important, even for those who want to go think about it. International law is very dense. I love international law, but I know that for some people, you know, discussing about city law and the Vienna Convention and the law of city very good. If you don't know treaty law, it will be difficult to know human rights law, because human rights law is based on treaty. I think there are many other aspects of international law that are very important. So don't skip international law. It's very important for doing any international area of law. The other thing is that comparative law, I agree, is very important even for human rights law. You will see that the international law principles are pretty much developed on the basis of law, the similar tradition. So having some background always helps you to understand the field better. We do have a pathways in human rights law, international, as Professor Mello show you, it's breaking down in international environmental law, international human rights law, international criminal law, and international organizations. So if you look at these different areas, you will see that there's a wealth of information in terms of the courses that you should take. This is a fall, an introductory class to human rights law. I'm not probably in the class, I think you should check the syllabus if you want to learn more. If you don't have any basic knowledge, it helps you understanding the basic principles, and you can take the advanced classes for interpreting human rights or advanced human rights, but the professors pretty much focus on specific topics. You take a general class again, you get a general overview, and then you're able to decide how to move on the rest of the time that you have with us. So check it out. That's a good first step if you want to learn something about it. And then I come to the piece. I mean, wealth of wealth of courses and trends now and wealth of programs. We have the program of the advanced place of human rights, like humanitarian law, where we have Professor Goldman was mentioning, we have 40 professors from outside the law school, the most renowned experts. And we have for 50 weeks to teach you about the different areas of international human rights. So you don't need to take 10 classes. You can take 1, 2, 3 that you care about, something you want to learn more about. It's a specialized program in international criminal law in the UK. It's an international specialized program on international organizations in Geneva. And I think that you are at the time of your career to take those programs. I've asked all the time if you should do it in the second year. I'm like, no, you should do it the first summer, when you are looking and deciding what you want to do the rest of the time. So if you're thinking about doing some of these specialized programs, do it now. Check it out, see if you like the field. And if you don't, then you have 2 more years to decide where you want to go. All the information is in the website of the law school. And again, you have plenty of opportunities to learn
Let me just mention before we throw it open, the summer program that's been developed at the Academy, which is a 3-week session, it's the best one in the United States. I mean, if you compare with the Hague program, not our Hague program, but the so-called, which is very good, but the broader Hague Academy. And for instance, where Claudia, I think, is quite young, you're able to take a course, for instance, over 3 weeks on European feminism. You are going to get the very basics of that over a 3-week period. Even because you're scheduling and so forth, you can't take a course on IHL. You have excellent people and so forth. You're going in a 3-week period. You get exposure. So, I mean, if you look across that, it really is a unique opportunity to be taught. In many cases, the people who are teaching are practitioners, if not, for instance, people who have shaped the law, either because they sat as judges, they're sitting as judges, commissioners, or whatever. And it's a really, really, I taught in it for years, I'm not teaching it this year. But if you look and see who is here, you will not find another opportunity like this in Boston and New Haven, in New York, or anywhere. So with that, questions, please.
Thank you. I just wondering, Professor Snyder, do you know which of your classes, meet the JDMA, the dual requirement, which is the requirement to do a course in economics, international business? And I just don't know exactly which of your classes might meet that.
Well, it seems that okay, so the real answer to that is I don't know. This is the first I heard of that. Find out. But I would think international sales would be the course to take. And it's not a great title for the course because it's as much comparative as it is sales law. So you got a lot of us saying, take comparative law. If you're not taking comparative law now as a 1L, I'm biased because it's my own course that I think is a great course. But there's a lot of comparative law in that course. And most people don't know this about me, but I was born as a civil law lawyer. So now I dream in common law now. So we do lots of comparative law there. And in the business world, that's just your bread and butter. Every day you're dealing with what are we going to do. So in that course we cover
we just take sales transactions, which are contracts, basically, and usually the course is about half U.S. and half international students, so they come from the other side, and they don't know yet about American law and common law, and y'all don't know about civil law, and we cover U.S., a little bit of English law on the common law side, international law, and then French and German law, which are the exemplary systems on the civil law side. So for anybody, even if you're not that interested in the business side of things, that will give you a fair amount of comparative law if you miss the basic comparative law class in 1L year. And even if you have done 1L comparative law, you might think about that if you want the more businessy transactional side. So that would certainly meet it. It's a fairly general course. I should say, since you're asking more about specifics, I don't teach international business transactions, but that's the sort of survey businessy course. So that'll do a little bit of sales and a little bit of joint ventures and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And if you want more of the survey stuff, you can do that. The main issue with that course is it has to do so much. It can only do a little bit of each piece, and it doesn't have much time for the comparative piece. So that's why I developed this other course.
Other questions? Yes, ma'am.
Again, for Professor Schneider, if you decide you want to do bit arbitration, other than our one, I know we have a directed bit arbitration course that's 2 credits, what else would you recommend taking? Would you do the trade lead up, or how would you?
Yeah, so if you want to do bid arbitration, and a lot of people do because I think they've gotten the memo, hey, it's booming.
Make money.
I don't think you want, first of all, I don't think you, we don't, it's not like you can do just bid arbitration courses. So by the time you do all the stuff you need to, you're going to have plenty. And I don't think you want to do just bid arbitration. I think you want to take international commercial arbitration too. And that'll give you some of the basics of how arbitration law works. Typically, for litigators and arbitrators, you live in two worlds. The procedural world that sort of governs how, let's say, the courts work. And that's especially complicated, as Professor Goldman was talking about, where you're talking about international litigation and arbitration. So you need to figure out how that stuff works. So you need to take, the international arbitration courses, or at least one, and you'll want to do trade, and you'll want to understand how the transactions work. So take either IBT, international business transactions, or international sales. Once you put together the foundational courses, and then that bid arbitration, then you'll get that. If you know, oh, my heart is totally into bid arbitration, you might consider something like an independent study or writing your comment or something where you can really take on one of the many, many emerging issues in bid arbitration, and that sends a nice flag. The other thing to keep in mind is we're talking a lot about substance. Keep in mind skills matter, and something that's easy to lose track of because it's so common, realize the skill that lawyers need the most, that they use the most, and that when I talk to practitioners, they say that you need the most, is writing. And so the more opportunity you take to write and get practice writing, the better. And that's true in international law just as well as everywhere else. The other stuff, really helpful too, if you really want to do arbitration, you might think of some of the trial ad courses. Go to hearings, that stuff matters. So those are the things to think about.
Okay, going once.
Don't be shy.
Don't be shy. Well, if there are not any other questions that we've been so persuasive and clear about it, just a moment. Speaking for my other colleagues, we're available. Obviously, I frequently get questions from students who are speaking to the course. They ask about whether certain things are covered or this or that. I work with a lot of students on writing projects.
understand the why people were doing comments. So I would be delighted to hear from you, sort of schedule a meeting if you have questions, and certainly advising in career advice and help, because frequently career advice is very much linked to what you're going to do in terms of your electives. So with that, thanks for coming, and good luck. Thank you.
Thank you. Feel free to come ask your individual questions. I know you may be shy to do it now.
Spring.
Spring.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
I know what I want to
do. I figured it was just the thing I wanted to do. I said,
I'd say
ours just canceled.
That I want to follow is to make the world better. That's why I'm in it.
Just
saying, I want to do international projects. For place, get some roads in there, build some hospitals.
I don't think it's necessarily
not going to happen. And best. There, and so I've really made it.
I'm seeing it like a 19.
So that could have been.
I've seen a lot.
Then you might realize there is land. It sort of depends on what's life.
Haven't we suffered enough?
Clearly not.
But when I look at
it, it's just not relaxing anymore.
Oh, it takes away from the legal aspect, and I feel like I'm doing more policy that's legal.
I don't know, just kidding. That was really fast turnaround.
Last thing I can say is, it's a frequent problem where you say, this interests me, and this interests me, and this interests me. And the best.
Well, I pressed it off. I decided.
First, take your best guess. Start pursuing that. Don't exclude the others, but take those courses. See if you can get an externship or an internship or a job, you know, summer job or part time job or whatever. See whether you like it.
What?
And
I think I just do.
You can only sort of think. This is what I like, this is what I
don't. Oh my
God. With all that said, keep in mind that
I don't
have so much control over how this is going to play out. Most people don't wind up doing what they think they were going to be doing anyway. You know, a lot depends on.
I've been stealing your tea, so I got extra.
I found it very interesting, even though, you know, I
never. No, don't worry. You're so
silly. Or brickwork or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know a number of Arisa.
I know, I'm trying to everything.
Arisa. But, you know, they love what they do. Try it. And there's a certain amount of trial and error, and, you know, paths are going to open and close. You know, just keep going.
But it'll be so much easier.
Happy with. And then you say, okay, I'm here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Hi.
Hi.
What kind of stuff on the fence in terms of?
I haven't done any. I'm only the one who.
I have a question, language skills.
Do anything?
Listen.
What?
Why?
Oh, I thought about the
fun. Like, yeah, too, but like,
oh, especially when they come off like that. Thank you.
I'm on the fence between also just doing professional trade because I don't think they're
unconfused.
Well, yeah, and especially in trade where, you know,
I would honestly, like,
you should look for alumni that are
protect the environment.
I've kind of done much of this year. What?
You have the mentor page?
I haven't been at a loss as to how I would also then maybe start taking classes to see about the international trade. On pathways?
Yeah.
I've taken, I'm in just, you know, an introduction.
I think we all do.
I know. We all have that first.
Recommend a comparative law?
So if you want to sort of try out the business side of things.
Exactly. Like, call my reference.
It's called International Trade 1.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's a great place to start.
Okay.
And I would say do that. The other choice would be to do international business. Those are both in the fall. If you were asking about spring, I would say international sales would work also.
Okay.
That's not till spring. That if you do trade in the fall, then you could do IBT or international sales in the spring, and that would give you both sides, the sort of public side of the money things.
Yeah.
And then the private or transactional, not just transactional, it's litigation
too. Yeah, I definitely reach out, like,
international trade disputes, this oversimplifies things, but those are really disputes between countries.
Yes.
Multinational corporations. And so there's, you know, one piece and then another.
Oh, yeah.
They're different practice areas. They have sort of a different feel. International trade tends
to be... I'm just like, hi, like, I'm blah, blah, blah.
Economics. International trade is really good. If you don't love economics, it's not so good.
I don't know economics.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, it's not like you need to know.
Yeah.
But that's not
possible. Okay.
If you're going to do it for
legal.
That was my experience.
Okay. Yeah, I just don't know economics well enough to really have an opinion about whether or not
it's like I was saying, give it a shot. Professor Lai is very good. Very strong in international trade.
Okay.
So it's a good thing to try out. And if you like it, then you can keep pursuing it because we have a lot.
And would it?
Yeah, I think by all means, I think you should. There may come a time to choose, and there may not be, you know, years from now. It may be that you need to choose. Some of my business law colleagues will get up here and say, on a job, you better choose the money side.
Yeah.
I think that's an overstatement. We do amazingly well placing people. Getting any job these days is not easy. And
sure.
Some are harder to get than others. You know.
That's fine. What's that fine, girl?
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Sorry, I kind of overheard. I have a particular interest.
Okay. Were you a paralegal?
Yeah.
They're the only people who've ever heard of anti-dumping and countervailing duties. Okay.
Yeah. So what classes did you take?
International
trade.
That's
good.
That's the first class to take.
Okay.
It's getting to be less important because we have more trade agreements.
The pressure's on him now. He is the class.
I'd say that's classic trade stuff. International trade 1.
Okay. And then I know we have, we can pick various classes for next, So what other classes would you recommend to take in?
Well, I mean, you don't have as much choice as you think.
Oh.
Because you have to take Crim Pro, right?
Right, yeah.
And so you do Crim Pro and trade, and at some point you have to take ethics, right?
Like, so,
you have to take is business associations. It's not required, but that's the basic business. In the old days, it would have been called corporations. So you have to take, that's like taking evidence. It's something, required course. Everybody.
I know.
So what I would do if I were you is make sure business associations you take sooner rather than later. Not because, frankly, it's that relevant to anti-dumping duties in particular, but it's a basic business course. You should get it done out of the way. And,
is it a prerequisite for a lot of classes?
It is a prerequisite for securities regulation and a number of other things. We have a culture here against prerequisites, but there are some, and one of the main ones is business associations.
So
it's generally called BA.
Okay. Thank you.
Pretty much everybody takes it, and most people will take it their second year, sort of like evidence.
Okay. That's good to know.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Sure.